Hello, here we are. Right, you're comfortable up there, are you?
Well, I don't know, I'm trying to get comfortable. That's a bit low.
Pull it down a bit.
Pull
it down a bit, that's right.
Sit back up there.
And Don, you're really comfortable there, I can see
you.
I'm good.
I'm going to
get comfortable.
Nothing is ever conventional with punk, is it?
I feel weird now, because you two are up there and us two are sitting.
Yeah.
No, they don't feel funny. No.
You will be funny. Right, here's the thing.
Anyway.
There will be a time for you to tell a bit more detail about what's been happening through those the years since 1977. But I'm going to start off with three short questions for which you might have an instant answer. Here's a question for each of you, and I'll give you my answer as well, because I'm supposed to be a punk survivor, which is, when did the word punk, as representing music, as opposed to representing an American kind of colloquialism, when did punk first come to your ears? Do you remember when you first heard about it? I'll tell you where mine was. In 1976, I was in the States, and the States was in thrall to soft rock. The coming band was Kiss, and we knew not what was happening. And somebody, when I was in the States, said to me, there's this new thing happening in the UK now, it's called punk. And I got back, and I bought the NME, and I tuned into John Peel, and lo and behold, there it was. This thing called punk. That was my first hearing of it. What about you, Steve? When did you first hear about it?
I think 1977, I was living in Bristol with my brother, and I was working in the hospital, and I went home one night, and there was an interview on, there was a programme on TV with an interview with the Sex Pistols. And it weren't the Bill Grundy one, it was the Janis Street Porter one. Mm-hmm. And she went, well, you know, I can't remember what she said, but she went, so what was it like? He went, oh, you know, we were wonderful and, you know, all this stuff. But he looked so leery and all that sort of thing. And then my brother turned around to me, he goes, what do you think of that? And I went, I think he looks great. I think they're great. You know, and he went, well, if you come home looking like that, I'll tell you to have a bath. And I went, okay. And I left about sort of 6 weeks after.
Okay, thank you. Paulie, when did you first hear punk?
I think for me there was an American fanzine, a magazine, and I remember seeing the word punk. I think it might have been called punk. And I just remember a picture of Debbie Harry on the front of it or something like that. So I think it was probably that fanzine magazine where I first came across the word punk. Obviously it's an Americanism and derogatory and everything, but that would be the first time that I actually saw the word or heard the word, and then it seemed to translate across the pond and then it became the derogatory word.
All right, Don, pick up from that. When did you first hear the word punk?
The Tubes.
Oh, yeah.
White Punks on Dope.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah? And did that signify a new music to you, or was it just...
Not at the time, because I couldn't stand the Tubes, but you asked me when I first heard the name. Association. As with Pauline, I think I saw that magazine as well. But I had occasion to have a little relationship with Patti Smith in 75, and I'm sure that she was using that word when I went to see her show and so on and so forth. So possibly 1975.
Okay, all right, second question, which is, when did you first consciously, the three of you, do punk? As in, this thing that I've heard about, I'm in it, right? Steve, when did you first think, you know what, I'm doing punk now?
Well, it was 5 minutes after my brother said that thing to me about, you know, getting a bath, you know, if you come home looking like that, I'll tell you you can have a good bath, and that was it.
Right, you were committed from that moment on.
Oh, mate, the great intergalactic revolutionary hippie of all time. Yeah, fuck you. Sorry.
It's all right, I'm sure we can manage that.
That was it, mate. If he didn't like it, that was for me.
Okay. Paulie, when did you first think you were going to... When did you first think,
well,
I'm doing it?
Well, I think you got to backtrack a little bit, and, you know, I was really... I think, you know, a lot of the punks were children of David Bowie, you know, and into Bowie and Roxy sort of a few years earlier. And I think the people that were into that, which was only a handful of people, I mean, I was brought up in a coal mining village, so there wasn't many people interested in arty type bands or anything. But I remember distinctly just before, well, for me, it was seeing the Sex Pistols, But just prior to that, I'd been going to see bands like Doctors and Madness, which were like a leftover from the glam rock times. And I actually saw a gig where the Pistols just put an end to everything, and punk, it was like creating a clean page, you know. And round about that time, I had joined the band with Gary Chaplin, and we were doing cover versions of things like The Modern Lovers, New York Dolls. And then we saw the Pistols sort of in 76, one of the first Northern gigs that they did. I saw them about six times. I just absolutely loved the attitude, the look. And it wasn't much of a step to being a fan to standing on the stage. It was like, well, let's just ring up and see if we can get some gigs. And before we knew it, we were out there doing gigs with really early on with not many, there wasn't that many punk bands around. I would say, you know, that's the point where we turned our back on everything that went before. For instance, friends came to see the Doctors of Madness and the Pistols at that gig. They didn't get into punk, we did. It was like you just turned your back on everything. A few people from the past managed to get through, like Iggy, Lou Reed and Bowie, but the attitude was absolutely brutal as to what was going forward at this point. When I sort of started to sing in a band, and that's, we were out there championing punk, which was totally new.
But you'd give us a clue there, because actually you were doing punk, rather like Steve, from the moment that you actually identified with the crowd, even before you actually stood on stage and did it. You were in it.
I was in it, yes, yes. I was in it before I actually stepped onto the stage. It was a small step to take, in a way. You thought, let's have a go, we can do that. Yeah. And that was the great thing about it.
Yeah. Don, where are you on this one?
Well, first off, I've never called myself a punk in my life.
I hope not.
But I identified with the spirit and the attitude. And, you know, one of the reasons we're sitting here talking about punk is that it wasn't just a soundtrack. You know, there's this whole school of thought, but not, it's the truth. You know, when the Pistols played, when the Clash played, you know, the next day, hundreds of bands would spring up, which is true, but also, a lot of people that went to those gigs took away that energy, they took away that attitude, and it informed whatever they did. So you had punk rock photographers, journalists, fashion designers, graphic artists, and filmmakers. And I actually think that's why we're here today still talking about this shit, because it was a complete subculture. As to when I picked up on the vibe, very early on, I saw the Pistols in the Nashville, I saw the Clash play, and what struck me is what they said was, you know, if you're brave enough and you've got a good idea, you can be part of this thing too. I mean, that was one of punk's greatest gifts. They broke down that fourth wall that said, you know, we're the band and you're the fans. We could all be involved, man.
Yeah, all right. The third of the chalk questions, because we'll come back to it at the end, is, briefly, how do you consider it now? Don, how do you consider punk now, looking back 40 years?
I don't spend a lot of time looking back. I've got to be honest. I mean, punk, this whole thing of relegating punk to this weird anomaly that happened in the late 70s kind of trivialises a bigger idea. Because punk did not begin and end in the fucking 70s. Excuse my French. You know, it's not even just about music. It predates, you know, it manifests itself in all kinds of artistic mediums that predate the whole music thing. And it's very important that people understand this, because if you keep looking back at this thing, it's like a dead thing. And punk's a living thing. So, you know, it's something that you're supposed to look forward to, not look back on. Okay. That's not what you asked me, though, is it?
No, really, I was saying, you know...
But I'm struggling here with the whole looking back thing. We've got to take it
forward. Well, I'm not asking you to look back. I'm asking you to look round now and say,
all right,
what is this... What is this?
Does in the West, I tell you something, in the West, for me, it feels like punk never happened. I've got to be honest. Because I look around and to a large part, it's become... It's very conservative. I don't see that individuality that punk celebrated happening anymore. And I think that it actually has informed a lot of things, but not necessarily in music. I think it's very difficult to be radical in music now. They kind of shut you down or keep you out if you've got something to say. But it's informed, you know, cinema... It's informed all kinds of things, man. You know, I think Family Guy's punk rock.
Okay.
What I don't think it is people with fast guitars and mohawks.
No, nor do I. Paul? Pauline, what do you think about it now? How do you consider punk?
The fact that we're talking about it 40 years later means that there was something very powerful went on there. It was anti-establishment. For the first 6 months of it, it really did feel like you were creating some new ground. You were kicking against it all. It was despised by most people. It was an outcast movement. And, you know, now it's still an outcast movement in the fact that, you know, you still have your rebellion festivals and all that, but it's not just about the music or the fashion. It's about a community of people, and I've met so many people in my life that I've met through all of this. You know, everything's connected. 40 years later, we're still talking about it. Yeah, I think it's because it emitted something pretty powerful. We're trying to remind ourselves what that was, because, like Don says, the state of things now, it's like even more difficult for anyone to make any sort of move with anything, you know. And we weren't in 1977, we weren't looking back to what went on 40 years before that. I feel like punk, it lasted a short time. It was just rammed with, you know, creative ideas, clothes, attitudes, but it wasn't meant to last. We didn't form a band and think we're going to make it right to the top. We just did it for a laugh. It wasn't really meant to last, and I think it burned out fairly quickly, because that amount of energy, you can't really sustain that. But everything after it was informed by it. As we stand today, it's as if the body was there, the skin was picked, the bones were picked, the dust's there, it's gone. And it's now just something in the ether, as far as I'm concerned, and it's really difficult to put your finger on what it is, what it was. You can only speak for yourself as an 18-year-old as what it was at the time. 40 years later, everything I've done in my life's informed by it, my whole way that I live my life, my whole attitude has never really changed, so, you know.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you about that later. I'm going to ask everybody, all of you, about what has informed from that time. But good, Steve. This thing about, have you got a view on it now? This, the punk thing?
What is
your view?
Well, I'm still doing it. I was down a pub last night talking to those racist, homophobic, dinosaur dickheads, you know, and they're still trying to put their thing on me, and I ain't having it, so I'm still rowing with them, still trying to put them right. So don't stop, you know, the attitude don't stop. You know, I might not play in a punk band, though, but if you call it punk, more crass did. Well, but, you know, it don't stop, but I'm still not having it, and that's what the whole punk thing, you know, did to me, is like, yeah, you've got a voice, now you can use it, if you're brave enough, stage your case and don't back down, and do what they say, you know, back your mouth up, which I do. And at the age of 59, I'm still prepared to roll around in the gravel in a car park outside a pub, standing up for my people's rights. I don't give a fuck. I'd rather not, but you know, just wish I could sort of make phone calls, you know, and get my people to do it. But there you go.
Doesn't always work. All right, is a slightly big question. Is it possible to understand punk unless you count in those other musics that are around it? Heavy rock, reggae, disco, folk even. Is it possible to take account of what it is without saying it wasn't a singular music? It was actually part of a kind of a collection of sounds. And I mean, in other words, you know, has heavy rock, reggae, folk, disco, got a part to play in discussing what it was?
I'd say absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the problem with all this shit is that when journalists try to kind of define what these things are, it all gets really confusing. I'd say the evolution of rock and roll itself was punk rock. Certainly the invention of reggae was. I mean, you know, that was about turning your problems into assets. The reason it's got a skank is because the guys couldn't do all the Eric Clapton shit, so they turned what would be a problem into an asset and came up with a genre. Hip-hop was America's black punk rock. It didn't last long because hip-hop has now become hip-pop. But so the thing keeps turning over, you know. I'd say there was aspects of punk rock to the birth of the hippies.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that.
When it started, it was anti-establishment. You know, you could tick all the boxes, except maybe the style. And even that was anti-establishment. But all these things had an element of this spirit and this rebellion, because that's ultimately what we're talking about. The minute you pin it down to this 77 moment, as I said earlier, it trivialises what is a much bigger idea.
Yeah, there you go. And like, it's like me one night, you know, oh, Frank's Pete Wright, the bass player, met a crash. God, Frank Zappa, for fuck's sake. Anyway, I've got a mate called Gilbert, went round his house one night and opened a bottle of wine. And after the second one, I went, come on in, Gilbert, give it to me. Let's have Frank Zappa, so he put on Hot Rats or something.
Mate,
and also I was like, oh, this is really punk, isn't it? He went, yeah, but, and I was like, how slow am I to pick up on this? It's so, you know, you're right. So if you look back, there's always influence, it's just of that one four-letter word that, yeah, you know, yeah, now we have to define it, as Don's saying, at a certain time, a certain place, and it's beyond that.
I'm in the business of actually getting us to take that four-letter word apart and throw it away and just look at the thing that matters. And but before I do, or as I'm doing it, Pauline, I mean, heavy rock, for example, I mean, you know, that was the very thing we were supposed to be going beyond when we got to punk. Well, I mean, there was some relevance, wasn't there, in the crossover between the two?
Well, everyone has influences, and, you know, nothing is new under the sun, basically. And I think with if you compare it to heavy rock or something like that, I think the punk thing was more politicised. It was more overt to shout and scream about stuff. The people playing it were quite often hadn't picked up an instrument before, so it was quite primal. I suppose when people started doing folk music and that, they were protesting. There's nothing new under the sun, but I think punk just had an effect, because we're very much a class system in this country.
Oh, wow.
To say God save the Queen and things like that, I don't think you had a heavy metal band saying that. They would say, let's screw the chick, you know. For a woman's point of view, it, you know, as a woman being in a band, I didn't think I'm a woman in this band. I actually felt like an equal. And I think with punk, there was a lot of tolerance to things like that. It was, everybody was tolerant of each other. You felt like the guys was quite protective of you even. The women were out there doing the thing, being spat on. I mean, you didn't get heavy rock bands being spat on. You know, you look at bands now, you think, my God, what would they do if the audience started to spit at them and throw stuff at them?
Ed Sheeran being knocked out.
Yeah, exactly. It was a bit of a battleground. It was something new that you were forging through. It was really, a lot of energy went out, and a lot of energy, there was a lot of anger. So, you know, you can say, you know, like folk music, yes, they did protest and all that, but this was quite vicious. It was quite nasty.
So, if I can just sort of, I just jump in, you know, and I think what Pauline's saying leads on something else that I think maybe people don't realise about punk, you know, yeah, there was film, but it was the first time that the feminist side of it was taken serious, you know, certainly for me. And I remember talking to these blokes in a band, maybe trying to write non-sexist lyrics and failing miserably because, you know, could you end up not being able to talk? Swallowed spit, sorry. But I think the punk thing was where the first time when the women got up and went, well, we're here, you spit on me, I'm gonna get my slit and crush it between your eyeballs or something. And it was like, and they were taking it seriously, and people started to take that angle of it seriously.
Yeah, but also the women were actually saying something as well.
Absolutely.
They weren't just singing along and some lyrics that a guy had written.
Yeah, dressed up in the
A lot of the women were writing their own lyrics about things that were going on around them. It was really different to what you'd seen women do before. There wasn't really any role models. You just got up and did it, basically. It was pretty primal, really, and then it was a learning curve, you know.
Listen, I'll take you on a stage. For some people who were in the crowds, punk was actually about people on stage doing a gig. Actually, for each of you in different ways, it was more than that. I think it was the business.
The people on stage were providing the soundtrack to a new school of thought.
Okay, but what? But right, Don, take the 70s through to the 80s. You were making films. You were managing a clothes shop. You were doing a lot of things. It wasn't actually, it was a very small sliver of it was actually about the being on the stage, and in your case, not so much till later. I mean, what were you up to? What activities did you get up to in that period?
I don't understand that goddamn question. What activities? Oh, I was a DJ in the Roxy.
Yeah, yeah.
Inspired by the whole punk DIY ethic, which none of us have actually mentioned, which is actually punk rock's greatest gift. DIY, do it yourself. You know, my white mates are picking up guitars, I want to get involved, I pick up a Super 8 movie camera and reinvent myself as Don Letts the filmmaker. And then, you know, punk was like this ladder that some people got on and got stuck on and got confused by trying to define what it was. And then the intelligent people got on that ladder and just kept climbing. I think there's a lot more harm trying to define what it is than looking at what it could be. And that's what I was interested in. You know, it's like the difference between The Clash's debut album and London Calling.
Define.
What, me?
Yeah.
No, that's your job, dude.
All right.
I just feel it. I feel it.
I think what...
If you ask me to think about these things, you know, these things are instinctive.
All right,
the minute
okay.
you
yeah.
ask me to define something that's instinctive, I get confused.
Pauline can say it.
I think what Don means is that none of us had done these activities before. You picked up a camera, I got up to a microphone and wrote lyrics and sang. But it didn't end there, because you actually pushed your own envelope all the time. It wasn't really to do with what was going on outside of that. You actually pushed your own envelope. I think the individuals who were creative kept pushing their own envelope. And it's a big learning curve, like you say, from The Clash's first album to, you know, wherever they went. Same as us, we started off, we could hardly play. By the end of it, we were making very accomplished records and we hadn't played before. It was a pushing your own envelope, improving things, thinking outside the box all the time, just looking. It was a creative process for some people. You know?
Basically, some people got just stuck on the fuck you, but after fuck you, it's like, what are you going to do? You know, anybody can do that.
Yeah.
But it's really about what are you going to do?
And it's like, oh, all those songs I don't want. Well, what do you want? Write a song about what you want. And it's like, oh, I don't know.
And that really separated the kind of first generation.
There's so many facets to punk, right? You've got, you know, your clothes, your music, your graphic design, all of that. But also you've got the energy, you've got the audience, and you've got the aggression. And some, I think what happened was, the second stage that came along, the aggression, the energy and the aggression is quite a basic primal thing. And I think some people latched onto that side of it, and that's when it started to become more violent. You know, the violent side started to follow through, you know, like the...
confrontation.
Tabloid punks you're talking about.
Yeah, you
know, the punks that saw the Bill Grundy show.
Yes.
Which did more harm to punk than anything else.
You know, you started to get all the skinhead thing coming up, and all the trouble at gigs and all the fighting, and some people were possibly going for the aggro rather than the music, or I don't know, it meant a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Let me take one of them. Steve, in that book that you're not particularly fond of that I was reading before, which has got quotes from you in it, you mentioned something that is effectively ethical punk, and it was about the idea that behind this thing that we're not wanting to call punk, that's got so many aspects and facets to it, were a set of values, a set of standards, a set of things you did and a set of things you didn't do, a set of things you stood up for and a set of things you stood up against. And, I mean, would you look upon, I don't like the word ethical, but would you look upon, were there such things as punk principles? And, I mean, I'm asking, like, I was a naive person who'd just come from Mars. I know about it because I was
back
there.
Back then you were doing all that shit back then?
I didn't even know the word principle.
Well, yeah, it was in your... I'm quoting you out of a book, so maybe you didn't actually say it.
I said ethical.
I can't even use those words.
Shit.
No,
I'll show you later.
Right, okay, all right.
Were there...
Right.
Were there principles? Were there standards? Were there things that you did and didn't do? Were there things you stood up for and stood against? Was there a kind of moral dimension to it?
In your own head. You personally. What I could never understand was when, you know, to me, punk was like, okay, get rid of all that bullshit that went before, West Ham, Millwall, you know, football, tribalism and all that sort of shit. And there's me a few years later playing a punk band, early playing Wigan, and the Wigan punks are waiting for the Preston punks to come down so they can beat the shit out of them. And it's like, well, hang on, I thought this is what punk weren't meant to be about. Yeah. Like, oh no, fucking Preston punks come down in the fucking... and I was like, what the... Well, that's just the same as what was before. So, ethically, whatever that means, no, that's wrong. So you don't have that. And also, you don't do the old thing. You don't have the woman as the... You know, all the stuff. You just try new stuff. You go to see bands like Poison Girls. I remember some bloke at a Poison Girls gig going to me, here, Steve, she's a bit old to be doing this, isn't she? Right, I'm 59. Right, and I went, yeah, what do you think you're going to do when you're 42? And she was singing about the problems of being a single mother and all this sort of thing, you know. And that weren't meant to be punk. So yeah, vice versa, who passed away, you know, earlier. Yeah. But you know, even that was involved in it. So it didn't. And people go, did it matter what age you were, what you were? I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, who couldn't afford to look like a punk, so they just looked scruffy. You know, I could never afford a pair of seditionists, for example. You know, I never had the proper brothel creepers and all that sort of thing. I always had the second-hand ones. So, you know, what's it matter?
Did anything matter? I mean, was there anything that you'd say when you broke it down to, if there's one thing that we are standing for or with or whatever, is there one thing?
I've got to tell you something. The way you're putting it is like there was a committee or a punk commission or something. There weren't nothing like that, dude. We were making this shit up as we went along. We had no career plan. There was no political plan. Everybody had their own idea of what punk was, which was what made it interesting. The minute you try and bag it and put it into a box, then it gets really confusing. There was no party line. Mm-hmm. Believe me, the Clash were very different to the Pistols. You know,
The
Clash was fucking different to everybody. You know,
that was the great thing.
There was no party line. That's something the journalists are trying to fucking... force on it. Okay. It was a confusion.
Right, it was a good confusion.
Yeah, a creative confusion.
It was a creative
time. But that was its strength.
You know, every band was different. If you hear the Slits, you know it's the Slits. You know, if you hear the, you know, Generation, any of the bands, you know instantly it's them because they were doing their own thing. They weren't all trying to fit in with some, blueprint of punk. It was about your own creativity, and that's a wonderful thing to be able to express your creativity. That's the most exciting thing about it.
Yeah, and the fact that when I was, you know, sorry about this, sorry to jump in and all that, but, you know, another thing I would say about punk rock for me, what it means for me, when I was a kid growing up, yes, someone would be a pop star and all that sort of thing, and the closest I've got to it was down, you know, Gavin Vernon pub in Dagenham singing I Threw a Blow in Bubbles, you know. How the hell do you buy a guitar? I didn't know how to do it. What is a PA? I don't know how you do that. I still don't know.
We knew nothing about stuff like that. Nothing.
You know, how do you do... You know, but all of a sudden, punk rock come along, and it's like, yeah, do you know what? If you've got a biscuit tin and a couple of knitting needles, that's your drum kit, you don't have to read music. Oh, don't you? No, you just like...
Punk said that a good idea attempted is better than a bad idea perfected. And in late 70s, there are plenty of bad ideas around. Because you've got to put this thing in kind of a cultural context. You've got to remember that rock by this time is sort of totally removed from the feelings on the street. Do you know what I mean? That's why these guys... I mean, punk rock was actually reclaiming the spirit of rock and roll. That was the youth trying to grab this thing back from these overgrown fucking arseholes that didn't know what was going on at ground level. You know, they're talking about Hotel California. Again, we didn't know where goddamn California was. You know?
And again, I think that word youth, you know, we were 18, 19-year-old, and that's a great time to think that you can change the world, and you did think you could change the world. I mean, as naive as that sounds, when you're 18-year-old, with the energy, with the ideas, you know, all you're doing is going forward, isn't it? You know, and the people that were around prior to that were maybe people from the 60s who were very accomplished in what they did. They were all a bit jaded, and we are the youth, and this is our world now, and you can...
And then he did a soundtrack that was relevant to their situation, of the people, for the people, by the people.
And I think sometimes you've got to discount everything, you've got to just diss everything to get something new coming forward. If you're carrying all this baggage, and I think to draw that line and say, right, that's it, you can make it through, you know, but you're just back there. it gave young people the opportunity to write their own page, you know, write their own about anything they wanted, about what was going on around them, what was relevant to their lives. You'll find that most punk lyrics are relevant to their own lives, you know what I mean, what was going on in their world.
Soon after that, we started talking about personal politics. We started talking about the fact that everybody had their politics. And, I mean, I think, as you said...
Politics, even that's kind of overblown. There were, like, a few... Crass, Joe Strummer, and a few others. But the political thing, it was politics with a very small P. Let's put it that way.
Was it?
No, not for Crass. No, that's different. Yeah. No, well, but for the rest of us, definitely.
Let's hear Steve on the politics of Crass, then. What was the politics of Crass?
Well, it's personal, and what I felt was that, you know... are you an anarchist, Steve? Yeah, I am. Have you read any anarchist books? Yeah, I tried. I tried to read a book by Bakunin. No pictures, really boring. First page, fuck that. Picked up Saturday night and Sunday morning. Hey, that's my anarchy. That's where my anarchy comes from. It's those 60s films that got fucking meaning to it. You know, Taste of Honey and all that sort of thing. You know, if no one's ever seen that film, fucking go and watch it. Because that is what my anarchy and punk rock comes from. It's absolutely. And it's that, you know, it's that injustice that I had as a kid. That's it for me. And that was my... But the rest of Crass, who were a lot older than me, and, oh, yes, well, actually, we're existentialists. What the fuck is existentialism, Ben? Well, it's rather like the N25. And I still don't know what it is. Apparently, that's what we were, though. We were existentialist anarchists.
Okay.
I was just a spotty little kid looking out for a cheap beer and a bit of a grope in the, you know, backstage area, which we never got, you know. A bit of recognition, but I didn't get that because we was all wore black and dim light bulbs, yeah, so, yeah.
All right, listen, we'll change the pace a minute now. I just want each of you to spend a little bit, rather than these short answers, tell us a little bit of the story of the period when, although it may not have been after punk for you, punk as a kind of media phenomenon had been superseded by a number of things. In the 80s, it fell into the background more, didn't mean it stopped, but media attention paid more attention to New Romantics. In some cases, it paid more attention.
It was pushed to the background.
Can we just say Thatcher?
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. All right, yeah. Let's say... she started early, she was 79, don't forget.
Yeah, exactly.
When she started, all right.
Exactly.
All right, life for you through the Thatcher era, and if you want to volunteer to start, I mean, how did you keep going through that period and doing what you wanted to do?
Should I start?
Yeah, Pauline.
From my point of view, you know, we started not being able to play. We lived in a tiny little mining village in the northeast of England. We started off doing clubs, we worked our way through the university circuit and we were up to the City Hall circuit, we signed to Virgin, had albums out, went to America, and then in 1979 we split up. To me, you know, it had lost its fun. I wasn't interested in slogging about being just a band. It was actually no fun as a life when you're doing it all the time like that. So we split up, and then I did a solo thing in 81, which was the Invisible Girls, which was totally different to punk, but it was with Martin Hanna, and there was everything informed by punk that came after it. So, yes, everything was informed. But then after that, in 1980, end of 81, I actually walked out of the music business. I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. I didn't like it. I didn't like the you had to be arguing all the time to get things to go the way you wanted it. And I just got very burned out and tired. It was the punk was a high energy thing, and it really, you know, I was burned out. So basically, for me, I actually came and lived in Liverpool for a year in 1981, Princes Avenue. Lived here for a week. The riots broke out in front of the house. The Toxteth Death riots, we watched it every night. The helicopters went over. You know, all you lot know about this if you're of that age. We stayed in Liverpool for a year. It was quite depressing. I was actually doing some recording, got halfway through a song. I said, I don't want to do this anymore. So I actually walked out, moved back to Newcastle and got incredibly depressed. Like, I'd never been depressed in my life, but I went into this very deep depression. I couldn't actually function. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was 23 year old and I felt like I was old. I quit at 23. I thought, that's it, I'm old, I don't want to do this anymore. So went through a few years totally depressed, but then I thought, well, you've got an ability, you can sing, you can write songs, and I started to write again just for myself, and then started putting stuff out on our own label. Did some more solo stuff. Then after that, I opened up rehearsal studios in Newcastle, which have still got 27 years, and had a couple of kids. So it's just a life journey, isn't it? You know, we all have to deal with wherever we are in our own shoes at any given time. So that's what happened with me after it all. I just turned my back on it and got out of the music business, and I'm not really in it anymore. We do stuff for ourselves, we organise stuff for ourselves. We're not really in that game, you know?
Well, I mean, you'll give the audience something to ask questions about, so I'll leave you there, because I think, yeah, you know, there's lots of things that people want to ask about. Steve, what about the 80s for you and onwards? I mean, what was the story of, in quotes, post-punk for you?
Oh, it was one of the best times of my life. I was sitting indoors looking through the paper, looking for a job, and it was all capstan sets and lathe operators, and what the fuck is that? And I was too old for it anyway, so I was already scrap. And then I thought I'd do a solo album about Jack the Ripper. Thank Christ someone showed me a film called Spinal Tap, because that could have been a disaster. Oh, I'm serious. I was like, right. So then I started writing a solo album about Punch and Judy, which never came about, and ended up doing a puppet show.
Which is what you still do?
No, I don't.
What? Do you not?
No.
You don't do the puppet show anymore?
No, I don't. But the characters, I made them out of paper mache, and they're too delicate now.
Punch and Judy?
Yeah.
Do you not know about this? Well, listen, save it up. Right, like that, right, we'll take that as your thing to think about. Questions may come that way. Don, the eight.
A Punk and Judy.
Punk and Judy. Punk and Judy. Punk and Judy.
Sorry, what are you up to? Sorry.
Yeah, you. 80s for you onwards. You know, moving on from the
dude,
first.
I can't remember last week.
Yes, you can.
The 80s. No, I can't. 80s. Help me out here with the Clash broke up.
Well, I'm was Prime Minister for a lot of
it. The Clash broke up in 81, 82. Big Audio Dynamite.
Yeah, go on. Tell us the story. Go on.
Okay.
Some people haven't heard.
I tell you what, you know, all the things that I learnt from punk rock, the kind of turning your problems into assets, the whole DIY thing, the whole thing about a good idea attempted, it's better than a bad idea perfected, all those things still serve me on a day-to-day basis. And I took that attitude and I took that spirit and I ran with it. And I've been running ever since. And the first stop after 1977, was it Big Audio Dynamite and the music videos? Damn. Anyway, yeah, I think I was doing music videos. I did London Calling and Public Image, and I went on to do like 400 music videos. And in tandem with that, joined a band with Mick Jones. And that was interesting. I'll tell you why, because to this day, I still can't play anything. When Mick asked me to join the band, I was like, Mick, I can't play anything. He said, yeah, but remember when Paul joined the Clash? He put stickers on his fret and he learned to play the bass. Difference between Don Litz and Paul Simmons, Paul got rid of the stickers. I never got rid of the stickers. I'd be on stage playing in front of like 3,000 people with loads of stickers on my keyboard. Sometimes I'd be so worked up, I'd pick it up and show it to people, like saying, look, if you're brave enough and you've got the balls, you can be doing this shit too. So the 80s, for me, was Big Audio Dynamite. It's something I'm actually very proud of, and I got to work with Mick Jones and write what I think are some very cool songs with the brother. And, yeah, that's the 80s.
Okay, so they were good for you. They were
like,
time of your
listen,
life.
Listen, man, from the minute I met these people...
Motherfuckers.
Life's been great. They gave me the equipment to push things forward and keep going.
Okay.
You know, seriously, I wouldn't be the man I am today if the Dread hadn't met the punk rockers. Simple as that. I own big time.
Okay. Well, that's three very different stories from the next stage on from that. But then, by the same token, here we are, 2017, and you're all still active in something that probably feels like it's got something to do with punk. Steve, what are you up to at the moment?
Not doing the Punch and Judy no more. I've got a new band going, and it's a little quartet. We're just playing little places, old 50, 40 people, but I like doing it. I've done me big fucking stadium thing, Shepherd's Bush Empire. I don't do it no more. If the last time I'd seen myself play at Shepherd's Bush as a 15-year-old kid walking, I'd never be able to do that. So I thought, no, I'll break it right down. So I'm doing acoustic-y stuff. Apart from that, I'm still doing stuff in the lifeboat and in Norfolk there.
Yeah, we need a little bit more about that, because, you say we're doing something with the lifeboat. You are a lifeboatman. What does that involve?
Well, it involves going out there when everyone else is coming in. And it's very rough. You're sort of shitting yourself, and you come out there and you don't know what you're going to meet, and you pull people out of sea, or dogs, or whatever it is.
Well, I mean, most people have not been a lifeboatman, so actually this is new to us.
This man is me, Don. I live in Norfolk now, and my missus goes, let's move to Norfolk. I went, yes, let's move to Norfolk, and I can just like stop everything. I'll leave the music industry. All I'll do is sweep leaves, and I'll write books. No, end up doing a fucking gig at the Shepherd's Bush Empire. Then I end up being a fucking lifeboatman because I gave him a cheque for a load of money. I'll come and see what we do. And all right, suddenly I'm all sorted. So that's how I ended up doing that.
Yeah, okay.
So
punk lives.
And that's one of the you saying big audience. I'm really proud of what I've done with that, and I'm it's not a big thing. You're too old now, you lot. It's a young person's job, but and you don't live near the coast, but if ever you get a chance to get involved in it, do it, because you won't need drugs or alcohol or anything like that. That's the biggest adrenaline rush you'll ever get, that feeling when you've made a difference to someone's life.
Okay.
And not only for the punk thing, because I think we all did that as well.
Yeah, well.
No, I think punk rock did that as well. Punk rock made a difference to people's lives. And so do the fire brigade and all that sort of thing.
All right. Pauline, you are, in fact, I know you're going to be back in Liverpool at least twice more this year.
Yeah.
So you're really back with the music industry, aren't you?
Not with the music industry, back with music.
Go on, tell us more then.
Well, I'd set up rehearsal studios in 1990 and set up my own business, basically, took a risk with that and had two young children. And in 2001, one of the ex-guitarists and the drummer both got in touch with me the same week about reforming the band, and I'd always said, no, I won't do it. Simply because I thought, that's in the past, I don't think I could even sing those songs now, I would be 40-odd year old. Anyway, we gave it a try, and they weren't part of it, but we got the set together, and we had a set, so we said, well, let's go and do a few shows, and we did that. So we've been doing that since, but it fits with us these days. We don't fit with it. We decide when we want to do stuff and what have you. We did an album a couple of years ago, which was terrifying to do a new album. After all that time, how can this be relevant? And when you always compare to the past, it's difficult to make moves in the present because of all this looking back business. It's, difficult. Anyway, we did an album, it was very well received. But then about maybe 4 years ago, I was asked by someone to do an acoustic gig with Viv Albertine and Gina Birch. It was in Gateshead. And I said to the guy, I've never done that in my life. And before I knew it, my name was on the poster, so I thought, I better get my shit together here. So I learned like three songs. I did have an acoustic guitar when I was about 14 out of the Grattan catalogue, or something like that. I hadn't really picked it up. Oh, I better get this sorted. It was terrifying to get there and do it on your own. But I eventually wrote more songs around that, and I eventually did a few more shows, which was terrifying. I ended up going to Australia for 2 weeks doing it. I don't know how that happened, but this guy was really persistent. So I've actually started to do acoustic things, right? And I'm pretty much of a novice. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're terrible. But I did a few with The Mission last year because we met Wayne Hussey. He was part of the Invisible Girls in 1981. He lived in Liverpool, and we put an advert in the Melody Maker, and Wayne answered it. He was a straight-laced Mormon and didn't smoke, didn't drink. And he came to Europe with us, and he was in Liverpool, which is one of the reasons we came here. Anyway, my solo stuff, when the Mission formed in the mid-80s, we supported them, and now they're back out there. I mean, every band's back out there, really. Last year they said, we'll just do a couple of acoustic openings for half an hour each, and I did that. And then I'm doing like six coming up. I'm coming back to Liverpool next week to do one. So I do the acoustic thing, which is the opposite of penetration. It's just so quiet. It's really intimate, and it makes you feel like you're alive, because if there's only you there, if you cock it up, it's like, oh, shit.
You're up against it. It's not meant to go.
Yeah, you know, but it does make you feel like you're alive, which is, you know, a brilliant thing. So I do that, and then we've got gigs coming up with Penetration again in October. But we sort it all out ourselves. We don't know whether it'll be ongoing, whether it won't be. We're actually writing towards another album. Just trying to keep creative, really, you know, in one way or another.
Dan, what's your current preoccupation, apart from...
Google me. Google. I'm joking. What am I doing now? You know what I'm doing? I'm hustling.
Go on.
It's a slightly glamorous hustle, but like many of you all, I'm sure I'm juggling all these different things to survive. I live in London, by the way. That might explain why I DJ nationally and internationally. I'm still making films, and I have a show on BBC Six Music, a weekly show, and basically what I've always done, juggling music and film. And I get to make a living doing something I enjoy, so I count myself a winner, not a punk rock survivor, but a goddamn punk rock success.
A hard worker, there's a lot of hard work involved. I think a lot of the punks were hard, you know, there's a work ethic sort of involved, I think. Ethics.
Yeah, but we're big now, we can use those words. Trust me, in 77 we couldn't spell it.
Yeah.
You just used the word work ethic, you had the work ethic.
Work.
Alright, stop there, right. Audience time. I'm going to sign off with a couple of questions.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
No, I mean,
Christians to the lawyers. Right, here we go.
Excuse me, I think somewhere somebody said this was about breaking down the fourth wall. Yeah. This is the fourth wall, right? Okay, somebody's got a roving mic. I think somebody in the writing on the wall, folks, has got one there. Okay, I can't see people very well, but I'm going to stand up so I see if I can. And I'm going to point at you. And then we've got about 10 minutes, 12 minutes for a few questions. So be economical.
Right, there's
out there. Any questions? There's one over there. Yes, I see that.
This one's to probably Pauline and Steve. I think a lot of people in this room probably went to Eric's. And I know they both played there because I saw them. In fact, Steve, Crass, if I remember rightly, they did a matinee.
Yeah, that's right, and we were covered in flop.
I don't know how many clubs did matinees. I don't know when you went round. Did many clubs do matinees?
No, not really.
No, not
we
at all.
We did one, Eric, for 14-year-olds, yeah?
Yeah.
That's right,
yeah,
it used to be a certain age, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then Steve came in later on. Yeah,
I don't remember any other places doing that apart from Eric's, to be honest.
Yeah. Just, the question was going to be, how did Eric's compare with other clubs? I mean, Don mentioned he was a DJ at the Roxy. How did Eric's...
Eric's rocked. Even I played there.
Yeah,
fucking Eric's was a trip, mate.
Yeah. It was meeting like-minded people. We were from, you know, County Durham. And very early days, we used to travel down to come to Eric's. It was, you know, you met like-minded people. Early days of punk, it was the people in Liverpool who were into it, and you know, it was all connected up, and Eric's was a key place for that.
Absolutely. Well, we are Liverpool, we want a little bit more touch of the detail here. What was Eric's like for you, Steve? Do you remember it?
Yeah, I remember it. We did a matinee, and all the kids came in and did what they thought punk rockers did, which spit on you. And my God, I never knew like 12-year-old kids had so much sort of liquid. Jesus Christ. And then we did that and wiped off and everything, and then we had to do it again. And it was just as bad. Can you please stop? No, we can't. But fantastic, because it was just like a big laugh. You know, rough and ready. You know, it ain't the big cups of tea and cucumber sandwich with the crust cut off. Essex boy. No, this is going to be fucking Liverpool, and if you don't like it, well, you can fuck yourself off then. Back down the motorway. That's what it was, and that's what you embraced. If you was a punk, if you was in it, you didn't just wear it, you were it.
What?
And that's the whole fucking thing about it. And that's what Eric's was as well. He was right up. You can say the same as Wigan, all those places you've been playing.
You were very lucky to have a place like that in your city, yeah. Because we didn't have a place like that. I'm from Newcastle, in that area. We didn't have anything like Eric's. So it was a great place, you know.
First punk I saw was in Newcastle City Hall, I have to say, but that was the City Hall.
Well, there was no club like Eric's.
No, there wasn't. Don, memories of Eric's? Any thoughts about it?
I mean, I can't remember last week. I just know that we played there. I know it's a legendary place. And I DJed there, played Big Audio Dynamite. The thing is, it's Liverpool. And any place where you get like-minded Liverpudlians in a single space, it's going to be happening. You know what I mean? Because it reflects the spirit of the people of the city. That's what that club did.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's the Eric's question. Next question, I can't see quite... one over there by the bar, and then down the front here, I'm seeing just...
that's a bit loud. The one then Don said before about Tunk being almost like a set of beliefs, you kind of live...
Where is he?
Over here, Don.
Put the mic down, we can hear you. Just talk. Fucking hell. Dude,
maybe it's to do with the sound system. Can we have slightly less on that mic?
Okay.
Mark, if it is, I think Mark, say it's not again.
I've been fortunate. I'm a bit young for punk, but I've seen Two Tone. I saw post punk. I obviously lived through Acid House. I've seen hip hop. Reggae. I've seen so many great movements, and like you said, in many ways they were all punk rock in their own way. And I even listened to, I heard Little Richard on the radio the other day, and it was Lucille. And I thought, fucking hell, that must have scared the bejesus out of everyone when that first came out. But what worries me now is that, like Roger said, with Brexit, with Trump, the political setting of now would seem almost right for another punk rock type movement. But where is it?
Right, three people to maybe reflect on that. Do you want to do that first, Don?
He's absolutely right, and the backlash has been a long overdue, and I've got no fucking idea where it is. I don't understand why it's not all over the place, because the cultural conditions that created punk rock in the late 70s are here now, and even worse.
But
I'll tell you what's interesting to me. It's taken the election of Donald Trump for people to finally get off their asses and get involved and do something. And it's just a shame that, you know, we've taken our eye off the ball and it's taken a dickhead like that to make us get proactive again. You know, so, yeah, you're right. I don't know.
Pauline?
Well, you know...
politicians are a bit like culture. You get what you deserve sometimes.
Come on.
We're talking young people here, you know, and... I don't know. The young people at the minute, the way it's all been set up is to prevent young people in a way from getting together. They're not going to be able to do it. We're going to have to do it for older people because, you know, I don't know what's going on. It's people's attitude is, I'm all right, Jack, and if, you know, I'm all right. So fuck you, I don't care, you know. You have people saying, there are no poor people. Have you seen the film, you know, I, Daniel Blake? I mean, that was filmed right near where I live, and that is what it's like, but the mass of people haven't seen that, and they go, oh, that's just, you know, that's just a film. If it hasn't affected people and they don't do anything about it, it's like, I'm all right, Jack. And unfortunately, it's going to hit everybody this soon, and it's going to be too late if people don't start putting up some sort of obstacle. I don't know. I've never known times like this. It's uncharted territory in many ways, you know. I don't know where it's going to come from, you know.
Let Steve have a go, and then we'll
Well, see. I think a start might be a couple of idiots called the Sleaford Mods, you know, and they're giving it a go. You know, I know a lot of people don't like them, but their heart's in the right place. But I think what it needs is... even I need to kick up the arse sometimes. And if someone can do that, you know, go down the pub, take a dictaphone or a notebook and whatever words go through your head, just write them down and then just put them out on fucking on Google or whatever you do with it, put on your computer. They went Norfolk then Caputa, put them on Caputa and put them out to the world, you know, and stop all this sort of banal, sort of vague crap that's going on. Oh yeah, that's punk rock, that's going to change. No, we ain't. We need to, you know, the young people. I can't do it no more, I'm too old to talk to them because I'm now born old. I don't think I am. So I think I'm fucking great, but they think I'm an old arsehole. So I need someone of their age to suddenly go,
They have been controlling everything, really, for many years. It's very sophisticated what's going on, you know? If you're looking at young people, what they've done with young people is, from, say, 16 to 18, you know, you've got all these music colleges where they draw all the creative young people in. They teach them how to play funk, punk, reggae, soul, and they're discouraged really from being creative. I mean, I have rehearsal studios, I see bands come in, young people, they're working to backing tapes, they've been told how to make it in the music business as part of the course. Now, back in the day, you met like-minded people, you got together and you did something creative. They're actually setting them off on the wrong track so that when they come out of those colleges...
Well, really, doesn't it come... Sorry to interrupt you.
They don't know...
I've got a spin on that.
Mr. Letts is broiling with something
here. No, I've got a spin on this listening, because there's always been people trying to dictate which way you should go and trying to keep you stupid and take your money. But I think one of the biggest problems in the West, and we can't deny this, is the actual aspirations of the young themselves. I mean, when we got into this shit, it was this kind of anti-establishment thing. Now a lot of people get into it to become part of the establishment.
Well, they do.
And
hold on,
I was going to say that, you know, if your value be that you want to walk on the red carpet, if you want to be on MTV, then I really don't know how rebellious you can be. I think in the 21st century, the secret is having new values and having new rules and saying fuck all that shit, and then the world's a really exciting place.
I've got one more thing
that I'm going to, in defence of young people, because that's kind of railing on them, and I'm an optimistic kind of dude, but it's very difficult. The economic climate, you know, all their energy is spent just trying to survive, and I do wonder how rebellious and how creative you can be if you're living with your goddamn mum until you're 30 and she's doing your washing up.
Yeah.
So that's a big factor in it. You know what
it
I mean?
Is.
So there's this double-edged sword.
It's a different world for young people now as it was then. But there are a lot of creative young people out there, you know what I mean? I got a phone call the other day and it was a young lad. My daughter's actually in a band and she's actually in Europe. They sort out gigs themselves. They are creative young people, but they're really on their own with it. And
I didn't say they weren't creative, I was just saying what they aspire to might be different to what we aspire to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're seeing it as a gateway.
You know, I do this, does it all in his house. And they don't know where to go with it. There are creative young people out there who do want to do stuff, but with punk, it brought all that together. You felt like you were in a community and supported with it.
That's the whole point of punk rock, is that if it went as far as your garden gate,
it was supported.
That's as far as it went. And I think what Don started off saying is the whole ethic of punk rock, whether it's today or it was 50 years ago, whenever the fuck it was, because I've forgotten, because I need another beer very quickly, you know, it's like that. Those three words, do it yourself, and, you know, and keep it that way. Do it yourself. Don't expect any help from anybody, because they're going to fucking give it to
both
you.
Both of my kids didn't go to university. They were both really bright, but they could see through it. You know, I said you've got to make your own way through if you choose not to do it. And we don't want the debt. So now a rite of passage for young people is to go to uni. Cost a fortune. That's the rite of passage. Years ago, they may have gone and done an apprenticeship or something and hung out with the, you know, the uncles and whatever, but at least there was some sort of rite of passage to employment. I don't know. It's just...
your fault. You started that going. We've got at least get one more audience question in, or I should feel like it wasn't a proper Q&A. I see you there. Have you got a microphone with you, or was somebody going to provide one? Where's the microphone gone? Yeah. Right, Don's going to get it to you.
Hello?
This is Anarchy! Right. Come on. Yeah.
This one's for Polly. Hi, Polly. I was just talking to this girl before with reference to how brave you must have been back in the 70s, 77 obviously, to go on stage in, you know, one girl in a band. But there was also the violence. I remember there's a video, isn't there, of you being spat on constantly throughout a concert. And then the whole crowd turned on the guy, knock all the crap out of him, obviously, but you just continue on singing. Did that scare you? Were you scared every night?
Yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, you just got up and did it, and, you know, there was a lot of violence and spitting, and you just had to front it through. I mean, I'd never done it before, so, you know, I didn't know any different, really, to just carry on or... I don't know.
Because there was no security in them days, was there? You had your roadies.
No. It was pretty
the crowds
rough.
Were there, weren't they? They're right in front
right
of you.
Right in front of you. It was pretty rough.
I saw that video.
It stood me in good stead for the whole of my life, really. I fear nothing. You know, I'm not frightened of anything. So, you know, once you've been subject to
that. You had to be really, really brave, though, didn't you? Obviously, to get on the stage, and secondly, to confront some of the violence or at the... In your face every night you play as well.
Yeah, I mean, I used to, I don't know whether it was nerves or whatever, but quite often, I mean, I'm not saying this to be punky, you know, I used to come off and be sick, you know, some nights. I mean, I don't know whether it was nerves. I've never done it before, so when you're in that environment with all that, the music was high energy, and I used to come off and just be sick.
All right, listen.
Right, thank you.
It wasn't punky.
I've got one more before we come to our end. I see. Yeah, that's right. That's the one. Get it to him.
Oh, thanks.
No, it's right. I think we've got one over there. Go for it.
Yeah, this one's for Steve, really. It's the start of the crass movement and, you know, the you know, dial house scene and so on, and Penny and Joy and Eve and that. Do you feel that, I mean, when I was a teenager, that was like a fairy tale of anarchism to me, and like I thought, wow, that's fantastic, and the ideology was great, and I've followed crass since I was 16, and I'm 50 now, you know, so.
Right.
But I get the impression, Steve, that you almost moved away from that, where I see Penn and the likes are still living the dial house dream, but you seem to have, like, you didn't embrace that type of lifestyle, is that right? Maybe it's because you were younger?
Yeah, I think maybe it's because I was younger, and of course, we was in the band Crass, you know, so of course, while we're doing Crass, I lived there. Once Crass split, it's like, oh, blimey, would I choose to live with you? If you were, no. So a lot of them went, and then it was just me living in this house in the country, and it's like, well, it's all very well to say, you know, go organic, or, you know, grow, be self-sufficient and all this. No good telling that to someone on a council estate in Bolton in the highest flat, you know. I'll get a window box, you can grow your own celery. Yeah, it takes 5 years, mate. You know, and it's cheaper than the supermarket. You know, so for me, and it weren't... and once class finished, I was like, there was nothing there for me no more. I had to move away. Not reality bites, because it was reality living there, Don, you know. I mean, you know, people think, oh, we live in the country, what do you know about punk rock? Well, every time you order a packet of fags, you go through the farmyard, trousers full of cow shit, you know. No point in wearing brothel creepers, because they're going to fuck up. So it was no buses, no punk clubs. Every time you walked in the pub in Epping, you get beaten up, you know. But you really were up against it. In London, you were safe. Really funny thing. So, no, for me, it was just like that time was finished and I had to move on, I had to grow up. I could have stayed there and done the jazz avant-garde. No, I couldn't, because I can't stand that shite. Thank God I met someone called Yona and she got me out of it and moved to Norfolk. But they all talk proper.
Thank you. I'm told we've got just slightly more. I've got one last question for each of you, but I think we might just... As long as it's not going to involve a disquisition on... on philosophy? If it's some kind of direct question, we've got time for one more. Over there.
Do you think this revolution in the world?
Right, wait for the microphone, it'll be easier to hear.
Dude, hold on a second. Ask me that question again.
Do you think you missed out on the sampling revolution in the whole world?
Sampling revolution? You mean sampling as in... Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
It's
all right. Dude, are you serious?
Yeah.
Is that a real question? The sampling... Hold on.
You're the one revolution, isn't
it? I missed out on the sampling revolution.
Yeah, you set up...
No, you were the first... I mean, I think we... kicked it all off.
Wait,
it was never supposed to be a career move. It was just an idea to us. In fact, the whole sampling thing happened because I couldn't play shit. And when all the guys, Mick Jones is laying down the guitar and the guys are laying down the bass, I'd be in the green room watching TV and I'd be hearing bits of Sergio Leone movies. And I'm like, yo, why don't we just steal 30 seconds of that and drop it in the track? And those ideas came up because I had no musical ability. So again, punk rock, I turned what was a problem into an asset. You can hear me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, I have no regrets about that whatsoever. And also, truth be told, we weren't the first people to sample. Lee Perry had Babies Crying on dub records that he made in the 1970s. Eno and Byrne did an album called In the Life of the Bush of Ghosts that featured a lot of samples, as did Holger Zucchi's album Movies. Also, we just were the first band to have hits with samples.
Okay, I'm going to call it on that one. Stuart, if you want to ask a question, you'll probably get it across.
Right, very quick answers. Yep. Don't think. Your favourite punk rock tunes?
Yeah. Favourite punk rock tunes? Your starter for 10. It looks like you might know, Pauline. Favourite punk rock tune?
I would say for me it's something like Anarchy in the UK, because those lyrics are just... You would have been hung for those sort of lyrics, you know, several centuries earlier, you know, I mean, God, I'm sorry, I'm saying, oh, God Save the Queen, any of those iconic Pistols records.
Right, Steve?
Johnny Jones.
Say again?
Johnny Jones.
Johnny Jones. Yeah. Okay, Don? I know it's so hard.
1977.
Clash. Right, okay. Right, well, I'm going to take this back because we've got to finish, because obviously we've got a second part to this event. I was going to ask if you any three of you got any kind of short advice for people who are trying to stand up for what they believed in now, but I think you've given all that. So here is my start. Oh, Steve, you have me. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, if you're drinking and driving, make sure you've got a car.
All right, okay. Yeah, Don's got one. Use your mic. What do you say to people who are trying to keep their head up high now? You know, these
draw times. Fast, shoot straight, and don't hit the bystanders. And that's metaphorical.
Okay, I guess that. Pauline, have you got anything?
I would just say to your own self, be true.
Thank you. Right, my well said. My last question is, I don't know if it's going to misfire on me, because things have in the past. Simple question, what is the least punk rock thing any of you three have done? What is the least punk rock thing you've done? I mean, somebody might say Punch and Judy, but then he's already off on that one. What is it? What is the
fucking interesting question. I like that question.
My one is the I did the meat raffle for the lifeboat down my local pub.
All right, Pauline, what's the least punk rock thing?
I have no idea. Well,
there must be anything to do with the babies.
Everything I do is to do with punk rock, really. What did we do with babies?
I don't know. I mean, if you brought up children, there must be a...
Listen, I cleaned the toilets out at Polestar. Is that punk rock?
All right. And Don, did you come up with an answer?
Yeah, I did.
Which one, sorry?
I made a documentary about the royal family.
And on that bombshell, we want to thank our talent, our panel for tonight. They may hang around. They may be chattable too. I don't know. Pauline Murray, Steve Ingerer.